Welcome back. Monday, April 29th, 2024. I am Seth Leibson. Mr. Bill, good to see you. Miss Terry, of course, and David Dahl, young David, good to see you. We're going to hear from you a little bit later. I want to hear about your tiki weekend. I deliberately did not want to hear about it off air because it looks like it came with a lot of interesting raconteurship from you, as well as a brown bag that I have yet to look into. I'm very much appreciative of. I wanted to start the show, as you know, we talk durables here when we can. I wanted to start the show on a phrase, a word I use often. I think it makes it into every commencement speech. My gosh, I got to do a commencement speech soon, don't I? It's going to be different this year, probably. And the word is decency. The word I speak about often is decency. And the reason it came back up in my mind was over the weekend was in Washington, D.C., the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which probably got more news for the protesting outside than what took place inside. But what took place inside did get some. They usually hire a comedian to roast the president and the media. I've never seen a lighter roasting of a president by a comedian. The comedian I don't know much about, he's Scarlett Johansson's husband, I guess. His name is Colin Jost, and he is a Saturday Night Live writer and comic. He was okay until the end. And I should like, because I've never seen a comedian do this at the White House Correspondents' Dinner before. If you'll work with me and stay with me, I'd like to unfold and give a little exegesis on some of this.
And with my family in mind, I wanted to share one last thing with you before I go, and I wanted to share one thing with you, Mr. President, before I go. I lost my grandfather this year, as you alluded to, a firefighter, William Kelly. He's the reason that our son's middle name is William. He helped raise me growing up, and I would not be here today without him. My grandpa was a firefighter on Staten Island for 40 years. To make extra money for his family, he was a substitute teacher, and he painted houses. And since it's Staten Island, I should point out it's not like the Scorsese Irishman painting houses. He was not a mafia hitman. He actually painted houses. The FBI is here. I don't want to start a whole thing. My grandfather was another rare Irishman who didn't drink because he lost his father and his brother to alcoholism. And I swear, Mr. President, this is not an age comparison. You remind me of him. Some of your best qualities remind me of his. And I will say he was 95 and he was still great at stairs. I think it's because he didn't try to run up them. But the reason that I bring up my grandfather, and I don't know if you know, realize, Mr. President, but Staten Island firefighters are not normally your demographic. Staten Island voted about 70% for Trump in the last election, and the other 30% was for Giuliani. But Staten Island also sided with the British during the Revolutionary War. So we're not always on the right side of history. You remember. But my grandfather, a Staten Island firefighter, voted for you, Mr. President. He voted for you in the last election that he ever voted in. I mean, I'm sure someone else will vote twice in this election using his name, but that's just how the Democratic machine works. He voted for you, and the reason that he voted for you is because you're a decent man. My grandpa voted for decency, and decency is why we're all here tonight. Decency is how we're able to be here tonight.
That was different. I've never seen a comedian so obsequious to the person he was supposed to roast, nor have I seen a comedian so obsequious to the journalists he was there to roast. Are they all there because journalism is a decent practice, engages in decency now? Does one think of Joe Biden as a man of decency? Whether it's in the way he talks about opponents, whether it's the way he talks about not just his direct opponents, but people and members of the opposite party of his as existential threats to democracy and the Constitution, his comparisons of them to Bull Connor and Jefferson Davis and Bull Connor. Is it decency that had him telling a black audience Mitt Romney would put them all back in chains? Is it decency to exploit your son's addictions in saying that an election, a vote in an election against him might end his son's sobriety? To exploit sobriety that way is an offense to the category, I believe, of decency and sobriety. Is it decent to treat his granddaughter the way he treated his granddaughter for years, as if she didn't exist, as if she didn't exist at any number of levels from the Christmas greetings and wishes to visits to the White House to the hangings over the fireplace of toys for the children? Was that decency? Is this man a man of decency? Miranda Devine at the New York Post was equally moved by this. And she said, there's nothing decent about helping your family sell out the country to shady foreigners for tens of millions of dollars and then pretending you know nothing about it. There's nothing decent about inviting millions of illegal migrants into the country and then lying that the border is secure. There's nothing decent about inviting a transgender influencer to the White House who bears their breasts on the White House lawn. There's nothing decent about sniffing and fondling children and women every chance you get. There's nothing decent about the sexual assault of Tara Reid. There's nothing decent about presiding over such a decline in decorum in Washington that cocaine is discovered in the White House and a Democratic staffer posts an X-rated video of his gay sex romp inside a Senate hearing room. There's nothing decent about rewriting Title IX into a radical attack on girls and women. There's nothing decent about allowing White House and campaign staff to refer routinely to Trump as Hitler pig. There's nothing decent about cursing out staff and calling a reporter a stupid son of a you-know-what. There's nothing decent about refusing to acknowledge your grandchild until forced to issue a statement as part of a child support settlement Hunter Biden struck with the mother and then failing to include the little girl in stalking lineups at the White House. There's nothing decent about lying the innocent truck driver involved in the fatal collision with your first wife was a drunk. There's nothing decent about refusing to provide Secret Service protection to Bobby Kennedy Jr. despite threats against him and the history of assassination in his family. There's nothing decent about botching the withdrawal from Afghanistan so that 13 service members are killed by a suicide bomber and then ordering a revenge hit that takes out an innocent Afghan aid worker and his family. There's nothing decent about continually looking at your watch in boredom as the bodies of the 13 heroes are repatriated to Dover Air Force Base and then infuriating the families by making it about yourself and the fantasy that your son died in combat as well. There's nothing decent about allowing your dogs to attack Secret Service agents. There's nothing decent about LARPing as a devout Catholic while championing abortion on demand until the moment of birth. We could add to that list. We could add a lot to that list, including nothing decent about ensuring that Supreme Court justices who you disagree with have protection they deserve, rather than saying nothing when there are legitimate serious assassination attempts against them. About the last thing Joe Biden is decent. Maybe we shouldn't get our moral cues from these comedians. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, if you'd like to weigh in. When I'm talking about decency, I always have to go to Judge Leonard White in The Bonfire of the Vanities, as played by Morgan Freeman, and then I'll get to more contemporary news in a moment. But I think if we understand the corruption of our language, we'll be better prepared to understand the misuse and the weaponization of it. I think we'll be better to understand the current events. Sometimes people need a schooling. Sometimes people need a reset. Bonfire of the Vanities, an old Tom Wolfe novel from the mid-80s, really, as Tom Wolfe so uniquely can do, encapsulates the culture of the moment in that time, as he's done with so many of his areas of examination. And what you have here is a trial, trumped up, criminal prosecution trumped up against a character played by Tom Hanks, Sheldon McCoy, and trumped up in large part by a character who is Al Sharpton. The case is dismissed, and they call the judge, Morgan Freeman, named Leonard White, funny enough, Morgan Freeman, they call him a racist. This is what transpires.
Very well. In the case of the people versus Sherman McCoy, based on the evidence contained in this recording, I'm ordering the indictment dismissed in the interest of justice. You dare call me racist? Well, I say unto you, what does it matter the color of a man's skin if witnesses perjure themselves? If a prosecutor enlists the perjurers? When a district attorney throws a man to the mob for political gain? And men of the cloth, men of God, take the prime cuts. Is that justice? I don't hear you. I'll tell you what justice is. Justice is the law. And the law is man's feeble attempt to set down the principles of decency. Decency. And decency is not a deal. It isn't an angle, or a contract, or a hustle. Decency Decency is what your grandmother taught you. It's in your bones. You go home. Go home and be decent people.
Would have been nice if, in expatiating on decency, Colin Jost, the comedian, might have, since he wanted to talk so much about decency, given a speech like that to the journalists in the room, who do throw men to the mobs. in a time where prosecutors throw people to the mobs for political gain, led by an administration that throws people to the justice system for political gain. Is that decent? All the while mocking and diminishing words like decency, but words like the word that animated Morgan Freeman here, racism. All the while perverting those words for political gain. Might there be an adult in one of the college campus rooms, one of the college campuses, that would tell these people affiliating with medieval fascism and standing up for one of the organizations which is the greatest violator of human rights in our world, a member of the State Department terrorism list? Might someone tell the students to go home and be decent? Now, what's going on the campuses is a fascinating thing. The students have taken over. They are in charge. They are the ones making the demands. You look at this one student from Columbia who was on the news all day today. She was saying, these are our demands. We will not submit to police. We will not submit to walking away until Columbia does X, Y, and Z, divests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's a violation of the contract. Their invitation to attend Columbia was a contract where they agreed to abide by the rules of the place that they were going to attend. Included in those rules are not just the general, neutral, applicable laws we all have to follow, but included in those rules, especially on a college campus that operates under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, especially in those rules that operate under Title VI, is the bar and prohibition on ethnic bigotry, ethnic and racial bigotry, which is being violated with impunity on these campuses, with the chants, the statements, and the flags on behalf of a State Department listed terrorist organization. Do these kids know what they're marching for? Now the faculty have joined them. Now the faculty at Columbia are lining up in orange vests in front of the students to prevent the police from taking them away. Do we think coddling insanity and immorality is the better way to go here because we do not want to face what will happen if we arrest, I don't know, a few hundred students? Let me tell you something. 900 students over the last week have been arrested across the country. Somehow the world is still on its axis. You don't have to arrest all of them. Arrest a few, make the point, restore order, and restore law, and restore decency. Colleges used to be about decency, and these, no, I'm sorry to tell you, are not ordinary college student protests. This is a bloodlust. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Dabrowski, he is our, he brings us our culture and economy update. He's the president and founder of Grand Canyon Planning Associates, GrandCanyonPlanning.com, his website. Great place to learn more about Grand Canyon Planning and what it can do for you. Great place to reach out to him. We welcome you back to the show, John. I hope your travels went well last week.
Very good. Yes, they did. Thank you so much.
Good to be back.
Glad to have you. At the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, Steve Moore, the economist, says that there's something interesting going on right now that maybe isn't getting a lot of discussion, that as bad as things are economically, we have a strong dollar. Mm-hmm. And just in the first 4 months of this year, the dollar has appreciated against almost all other currencies, helping to tame inflation somewhat as the higher dollar value makes imports cheaper. Can you tell us what is meant when we say strong dollar, weak dollar, boosting the dollar, talking up the dollar? What is meant by that?
I think we all know that if we travel somewhere else in the world, right, a different country, We may be doing exchange of our U.S. dollar for the current currency of whatever country you're traveling to so that you can buy things. And, you know, if you look at maybe going to certain countries, you take $100 and maybe you get $80 in that currency back. And you think, well, my gosh, that doesn't sound very good, right?
Right.
I'm spending $100 to get $80 back.
Right.
So that would be a situation where wherever you are, that currency is stronger than the U.S. currency,
right? That's
where the
dollar is weak against that currency.
Right.
Right.
But in reality, what's happening now is around the world is the U.S. dollar is holding up very well. You know, even though there's some cracks in the economy here and there, people still believe that the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency of the world. And I would just ask anyone out there who's listening, even you, Seth, if you were going to invest, would you want to have your money sitting in U.S. dollars or would it be in, you know, a different currency, China's currency or Russia's currency or the euro? What would, you know, where would you want to have your money? And most people feel pretty comfortable and confident that if they invest in, say, U.S. treasuries here of this country, that they're going to get their money back with interest. And right now, the interest rates are relatively favorable considering, you know, what we've gone through over the last 15 years with 0% interest rates.
Now, what would weaken the dollar irrespective of what other countries are doing? I'm assuming things like inflation, higher tax rates, energy problems. What would weaken the dollar?
Yeah, all of those things.
Uh-huh.
Economic issues certainly can cause, you know, weakness in the dollar. Exports, imports, I mean, those are big factors when it comes to strength of the dollar. Because if we're exporting goods above and beyond what we're importing, people are converting their dollar, whatever that might be, to U.S. dollars when that happens. And that's showing, you know, strengthening our dollar when that happens. When we have a deficit, you know, the way we would offset that in a trade imbalance is oftentimes we would sell debt to offset that deficit, which can help prop the dollar up. But also growth, jobs, you know, GDP, a variety of different economic indicators would affect the dollar as well. And it's interesting right now, though, that we do still have, because we're growing faster than most countries out
right.
there.
Right.
Even though we have anemic growth,
right.
you know, this past GDP was
we're
low.
The tallest short man, I think, Stephen.
Yeah,
and
that's what they. That's right. That's what he said in his article.
Yeah.
But again, it's where are you going to put your money? And it's the U.S. is still, no matter how crazy things look like out there right now, they're still better than the rest of the world.
Well, I don't know if we have enough time to get into it. Well, let me just put it this way for an easy answer. Are you concerned about the Biden proposals that are being unveiled today that show that his intentions for capital gains tax increases could nearly double capital gains?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, of course, that would stifle investment immediately.
Right.
And it would also put a run on probably selling of stock, which would you know, devalue the stock market.
Yeah.
Because people are going to want to sell, you know, based on the gains that they have built up all these years now and sell at a much lower.
Kind of a run on that, huh?
Yeah. So that would affect the stock market severely and also would certainly change the way people think long term when it comes to their investments, right? We invest for the long term because we want these long term benefits of capital gains.
Right.
But if we're not going to have that benefit, well, then there's no reason for us to hold on to anything for any specific period of time. There are reasons that these tax laws were put in place.
Yes.
It's to help the economy, to help companies grow, and for long-term investment to grow your net worth. And if the government's going to take that away from us and there's no incentive for us to invest, you tell me. I mean, how is that going to be good for the economy and for the country?
It isn't. Thank you, John.
It isn't.
It isn't. Yeah, that's the easy answer. Thank you, JD.
Yeah. Folks can reach out to me at GrandCanyonPlanning.com. You can request an appointment right there. Securities and advisory services offered through Creative One Securities LLC. Member of FINRA and SIPC and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC and Creative One Securities LLC are not affiliated. Thank you, Seth.
Nicely done, John. Thank you. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I get stuck on this song every time, walking on a Thin Line by Huey Lewis in the News. It's the song I play in my last... my last lap, whenever I'm running, I always make sure
angry
it's that
all
song.
The time.
Angry all the time. Is that me? No, just it's just a great song. It's just a great beat, and I love Huey Lewis. I went running with Hugh this morning, as we tend to do Monday mornings, And we always aim for a negative split. You know what a negative split is in running? It's where your second half is at a quicker pace than your first half. So your first half is kind of treated as a warm-up, and then you try and shave off any number of seconds on an average mile. And I always, to do that, because it's a temptation to run fast when you begin to start out fast. That's just death. And so I always start off my first half of my run with listening to a podcast or talk, some speech or something, and then I turn to music on the second half. Well, today Hugh kicked my arse because he just did music the whole time. He cheated with Huey Lewis the whole time, calling Hugh Hallman out on cheating with Huey Lewis. All right, let's go to Rob in Surprise. Hi, Rob. How are you, sir?
Oh, Seth, I'm good. And that song from Huey, one of my favorites as well, off the Sports album.
Yeah.
And I think every song on that album is great. The Heart of Rock and Roll, I think, is the first song and the first side. Another one of my favorites. And
I think he opens his, or used to open, I don't know if he's performing anywhere, he used to open his shows with that song.
Yeah, and what a great opening.
Yeah, right.
I think there's something wrong with, is it his voice?
There was a stroke or something. There was some form of aphasia, that kind of put him on the ice for a while, and I gather
And I don't think he's out there touring anymore, sad because, you look at Brian Richards, Rolling Stones, Keith Richards.
Yeah.
And then you think of how old he is, and he looks it, and you look at a guy like Huey, probably 20 years young. Well, maybe.
I think he's low 70s. I think in his low 70s, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. But even younger than Keith.
Yeah.
And you kind of worry that this poor guy, can't even get out there.
I know. It's so sad.
And it's funny because, he didn't even know how to sing.
I know.
And I guess he went backpacking with a harmonica in Europe or something, and then somehow got back in San Francisco and somehow learned how to sing.
Worked hard at it, had a late start, as most musicians, compared to most musicians. I think he didn't get famous until his 30s, if I'm not mistaken. Just a good all-round guy, from what I can tell. And great music, really knows how to, how to put a lyric together, and really appreciates a band too. That's a tight band.
Yeah.
The News. It's a very tight.
It's a very tight band. Their lead guitarist, and I forget his name, is exceptional. The drummer's great. The bass player's great, and a lot of their videos are great as well.
Yeah, they're a lot of
fun. But of course, that's not why I called.
Okay.
I was thinking, you're talking about decency, and I absolutely agree about that. There's another side of the coin. And I'm reminded of an old Johnny Carson show that had Colin Powell on it. And they were bantering back and forth. And Johnny asked General Powell, what he thinks is needed in America or something. And this would have been probably pre-Gulf War I. And Colin Powell said, Americans need to develop a sense of shame again. I think a lot of what you see going on, whether it's these demonstrations or a lot of the shenanigans that go on in the political rule, is these people have no shame. They're shameless. And decency and shame are probably interrelated in a very complicated way. Decency, good. Shame can be good or used for good. But there aren't a lot of bad people, if any, who have any sense of shame at what they do. I think, Joe Biden's a good example. I think all the pro-Palestinian rioters, who they may just be stupid.
I think there's three things there. I think there, I the best I can do, and I'm willing to add or subtract or be argued with on this, having watched these students fairly closely, I fairly assiduously paying attention to these protests and what's going on and what's being said. I think some of them are just merely entitled. We have a right to be here. We have a right to make demands. We have a right to say anything we want, and you can't stop me. That's kind of one category. The other category is they're stupid. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. We've seen a lot of the interviews like that. We highlighted those two girls from NYU last week who had to ask each other why they were protesting and what they were protesting against. You've seen a lot of that. And then there's a third category, which is the ideological, the ideologically pure Marxist. And, you know, you take someone like Ilhan Omar's daughter. She's one in three. She's both one in three. I don't think she's two. I don't think she's stupid. I think she's entitled, and she's a Marxist. But usually it's one of those things. But anyway, I'm interrupting. Those are the categories I've been able to.
Yeah, the other one, the other category that I would include in that are the rent-a-rioters.
Yeah.
The people that are being paid by certain groups, whether it's Open Society or and perhaps those who are just curious of what's going on and maybe aren't holding a flag or saying anything, but people used to do that, according to one of my friends from high school who went to the University of Wisconsin in the 70s when they were having all their anti-war stuff go on. A lot of people were there to get the chicks.
Yeah. I can't say that about this crowd, can you? I've looked at the raw material. I don't think they're getting
that sort of thing. I couldn't agree more. There's just not a lot of good-looking, well, that's my personal taste.
No, it's objective. Beauty can be objective. Beauty can be objective. These are not beautiful people. These are vulgarians and barbarians who treat themselves and the world that way. I think so.
Yeah, inside and out.
I think so. I agree. I think
one begets the other.
I agree with that, too. I think there's a lot of that. It's awfully hard to find beauty in someone who spews hate. Awfully hard.
Well, that's right.
Awfully difficult.
And I'll bet they don't go to church much either.
Well, I don't. I wouldn't blame them in the sense if that's not their religious tradition. You do see a fair amount with a different religious. Do you realize the high percentages of foreign students at these elite universities? It's like 20 to 30% at these elites. Did you realize it was that high? I didn't. I did not realize that.
I figured it was. I didn't know any specific numbers, but it seems like there are a lot who have had some sort of a lot of Indian, maybe some British and Asian.
There's a lot of Middle East. There's a lot of African, and there's a fair amount.
They've had a good education,
yes,
through high school, and are smart enough.
They know how to articulate what they're talking about. They know nothing of, right? Think of where they were raised. Think of what is taught in those madrasas. Thank you, Rob. We'll be right back. Well, the fortunate thing about the job that I have is that people walk by and you can yell at them to come on in, and sometimes they'll share what's on top of their minds. And it's a delight to have Mark, our general manager, walking by, often referred to as the suits upstairs. And he noticed that I had, what was it, Mark? I have a lot of boxes.
Balance of nature boxes, yeah.
And you suggested a balance of nature food party, lunch party?
Yes. I'm tired of having smoothies every day.
Yeah.
I thought that might be even a better way to stay healthy.
I'll make a deal with you. Since Balance of Nature is not a sponsor, all of those Balance of Natures are paid for by my ample salary that you provide me. So
yes,
thank you for that.
Well.
I'll make a deal with you. I will open up those boxes for the office if they can accompany, a pizza, some Chinese food. How about a 6-foot-long sub?
Yes.
That's a party.
Like from Jersey Mike's, perhaps?
Well, Jersey Mike's or...
The guy who shoots guns. I forget.
Yeah, well, we kind of like DeFalco's. Remember,
DeFalco's.
You must have grown up with DeFalco's.
That was a long time ago.
They're still there, still putting out great sandwiches.
Yeah.
Cheese and stuff could do it. We could do Nicoli's, which is up on 16th Street. There's
Nicoli's,
no shortage.
We used to go there as a kid.
It's still fantastic.
Hot bread, the salami,
and the pizza is fantastic. Okay, so do we have a deal? I will provide Balance of Nature for the office if it is accompanied by something you can sink
your
teeth
into. This?
Yes.
And no offense to our
friends. Negotiating in public is probably not a good idea for me. Go ahead.
No offense to our friends at Balance of Nature.
Yes, sir.
They're out in Scottsdale, I believe, is their home. So they're probably listening right now.
I love them. I mean, I
do too.
I take it for three or four times a day sometimes.
We should have a pizza party. And then have that as
all right.
Our side.
Okay, so division of labor. as Henry Ford taught us, I'll handle the balance of nature part, you handle the pizza part, and Nicoli's makes great pizza.
Be happy to do that.
Okay, any day.
We'll do that.
All right.
In fact, the big boss is coming.
Your suits are coming in.
Did you know that?
Yes.
The big boss.
The big bosses. Yeah. Do you have a good weekend?
See you.
Yeah. With some pink paper. I hope
not. No, not for you, my friend.
Okay,
not
thank
for
you.
Me.
God bless. Okay.
Thanks. We're, always good to see you, and thanks for all you do.
Oh, well, always. Thanks for giving. You know, it's a privilege to be here, so thank you for allowing
me. Yeah, I was here at 6:30 this morning. I didn't see anybody, but that's
where
okay.
is everyone?
I don't know. Doesn't everybody start at 6:30?
I know. It's the best time of day.
Well, that's a way to beat
You're a morning guy. People who miss the morning miss a lot, don't they?
I enjoy the mornings.
Yeah.
There's no questions.
Right.
Nobody's
asked. Yeah, no one's here. Now you're going to invite me to come. Now you've just done it. Because I come in, your door shuts around noon. So now I know how to get you and get time with you. Yeah. FaceTime. Come in at 6:30.
Well, now that reminds me of a gentleman that I worked with many years ago, no longer with the company. He used to come in for that FaceTime.
No longer with the company.
Very annoying.
The five most important words in that sentence, no longer with the company. All right. Thank you, Mark. We have a lot more coming. You bet. We have a lot more coming up. We'll be right back.